This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval. Happy Monday. And you know the way we start Monday here in Mom's basement before we start podcasting, we share our mug designs. Look
green
at this one,
slurry.
OG. I got the old school mug design.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. Huh. And,
I don't have one of those either.
I feel like the only swag I get is the errors, like the initial prints where the stuff's out of alignment, and
we'll just give that one to Benjamin's skirt that Mrs. OG got. Yeah,
it couldn't have been more awkward. But this is our old school logo on a mug. Doug's drinking some kind of beer.
I've switched brands some to kind of Waterloo beer. Peach Waterloo flavored beer. Waterloo peach beer. Flavored.
Yes.
On a Monday morning.
Last week, didn't you have a can of water? Didn't it just say water on it?
No.
I thought it said
water. You probably saw Waterloo.
That's what they were selling at Costco.
Like unbranded water?
Yeah, I was just like, how do you drink that?
What I like about this water is it's less expensive.
Ugh. Comes... This is a can. You got to get the water out of the tap. That's where all the good water's from.
Yeah, unlimited supply there.
It is in Michigan.
Let's raise our drinks. Whatever it is. Oh, and OG's drinking seaweed. I forgot to tell everybody that.
Yes, indeed.
OG's just
you know that duckweed green scum slurry that forms on top of swamps.
And it's good for you.
Tailwaters off the grocery store parking lot. That's what OG's drinking.
OG takes a big gulp and look, a trout. So on behalf of those of us making Podcast in Mom's Basement and the men and women at Navy Federal Credit Union, need a big salute to the people who kept us safe all weekend, our troops. Let's go stack some Benjamins together now.
I guess you should have called.
I did call earlier when using the phone.
Earlier, when was that?
Or later when then I left a message.
A message? What number did you call?
2-4-9-5-6-7-8.
I can't hear you. You're trailing off. And did I catch a niner in there? Were you calling from a walkie-talkie?
No, it was cordless.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Don't. Not here. Not now.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and brace yourself. Today, we're doing a deep dive into OPP. Yeah, you know me.
Yes.
Wait. No. Not that OG, the other OPP. Today, we welcome a woman with all the dirty details. Well, it's not getting any better, is it? Here to give us a sneak peek behind the scenes of the new Other People's Pockets podcast, we welcome Maya Lau. That's what she thought I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
If that isn't gold, how about this? In our headlines, word on the street is that gold prices are headed south now that interest rates are on the move. We'll ask State Street's expert George Milling Stanley about where gold fits into your portfolio. Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to a lucky Stacking Benjamins listener. And of course, I'll share some slightly risque trivia. And now, two guys who are down with getting into other people's pockets. It's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
If they're buying lunch, I'm doing that every day. Hey there, Stackers. I'm Joe Salci, High Average Joe Money on Twitter. And man, what a show we have for you today, all about OPP, Doug. Yeah, you know you. You know me.
Yeah, you know you. No, that's not how it goes.
You know me. Oh, and we've got the OG.
Get on with OGG.
Oh, there you go. I like that.
How are you, man?
Good, man.
I know I had the unnecessary pause there, dude. Just a awkward beginning to this show, but man, we've got
sweet.
a fantastic show coming.
Nobody?
Sweet.
What's mine say?
Dude.
Dude.
Sweet.
Dude. Just got it.
Okay.
What's the name of that movie? Hey, where's my car?
It's the only part that matters. So you don't need to watch the whole movie.
That one scene is the entire movie.
That little 15 seconds is the highlight of the entire film.
Isn't it, man, where did you park my car? Is that the movie?
Or what'd you do with my car? Or Dude, where's my car? Yes. Great show today. Now that we're past that, we got Maya Lau here. We're going to look behind the scenes at the making of a brand new podcast that's distributed by Pushkin, the company partly owned by Malcolm Gladwell.
Good dude.
Other People's Pockets. Maya Lau, who was an investigative reporter for the LA Times before she began this show, she asked people, how much money do you make? Your money secrets. She basically dives into all the details we were taught not to talk about, which is absolutely awesome. But before that, we're going to talk about gold prices. We got a great TikTok minute. So man, we got to go. But before all that, we probably should take just a moment for this. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Stackers, controlling your money on a day-to-day basis comes down to two things. Number one, great communication, either with yourself or with a partner. And by great communication, what do I mean? I mean, sitting down with your app of choice and putting together your strategy based on what you spent the week before. It's super easy, a 20-minute meeting a week. You look through your expenses, and then you plot out, what are you going to do next week? And you know what? That might seem little, but the big things stem from that. And if you have an app that keeps that in front of you, that helps make it even easier. And the app Cheryl and I use is Monarch Money. We've been using it now for about a year. As you may know, I've used lots of different solutions, and this is by far the one I've stuck with the longest. It helps Cheryl and I collaborate. We can talk about our financial goals. For us, it's travel. We're also adding to our house. We have a goal in a few years to really work on our lawn as well and just make it a pretty place to live. But the travel piece, as you know, if you've listened to me for any amount of time, that's a big one. And what's cool is I can put our financial independence goals and our journey up right next to our budget, because everything at Monarch is very intuitive. It is very customizable. So what the heck is Monarch? You're sitting there wondering to yourself, aren't you? Person I just made up. Yes. Let me tell you what it is. It's an all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you comprehensive view of all your accounts, your investments, your transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track your progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, Stackers, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. Got to have the slash Benjamins to get the extended 30-day free trial so you can see that you'll like it as much as I do. How does it work? Well, it's very intuitive. It has a simple, intuitive design that makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. You can collaborate with your partner, family, or your financial advisor. What's cool is you can invite all these people to your account at no extra cost, so you can collaborate And everybody gets their own login info and everybody gets a joint view of your finances. And as I mentioned earlier, it's customizable, and best yet, it's ad-free privacy you can trust. No ads. You're not being marketed. When I had other apps that were free, I got marketed all the time. Well, not only do they not do that, they also don't sell your data to third parties. After trying out Monarch for myself and using it for about a year now, but on a daily basis, I totally get why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. That's Monarch Money, MONARCHMONEY.com/Benjamins for your extended 30-day free trial. I sounded really somber when I introduced those. I didn't mean for that to not be joyous. It should be joyous listening to our sponsors so we can keep podcasting. But we got a great show, so let's get going.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our headline today comes to us from CNBC. OG, remember the days when we thought we didn't need any precious metals ever in a portfolio anymore? Because now we've got crypto, we've got Bitcoin and Ethereum and all of those things that I feel like we don't talk about nearly as much now as we did 2 years ago. Well, gold back in the news much more lately. Gold set for a drop, according to CNBC, amid rate rise worries. U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell suggested higher and possibly faster interest rate rises would be needed in the future to curb inflation. And all of a sudden, people said, this spells bad stuff for gold. So we had a YouTube Live event, which we host on the Fireside app. If people want to ask questions, we had quite a few people ask questions. This gentleman from State Street, George Milling Stanley, their gold expert OG, joined us. And I asked him about this headline. And well, here's what he had to say about the possibility that gold prices might be headed south.
I think the first thing to say is that the last couple of times that the Fed has been in sustained tightening mode, and by that I mean a couple of years or more of rate hikes, there have been two previous occasions that I can think of recently. One was between December 2015 and December 2018, when the Fed raised rates 9 times. The one before that was just a 2-year period, June 2004 to July 2006. And the conventional wisdom has it that if you raise interest rates, you're raising the opportunity cost of owning gold, so the gold price is going to fall as investors bail. On both of those two previous occasions, a 3-year run of rate hikes and a 2-year run of rate hikes, the gold price went up in the first case 18% and in the second case 25%.
Wow.
Now, the Fed has only been raising rates for about a year at this point, so we're still not into that sustained tightening mode that I'm talking about. But I believe that if inflation persists and if the Fed continues to raise rates, I think that inflation will outweigh what the Fed is doing and that the gold price is going to recover. I genuinely believe that. That's what the history is telling us, that it may not rise immediately, but if inflation does...
He basically continues to say, OG, what you heard right there, which is, you know what? Betting on the future, looking in your crystal ball, everybody, might not pay. We talk about this for stocks all the time, but it appears it's the same for precious metals.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at from a historical standpoint, I can't understand why anybody would actually own actual gold or silver anyway, because it doesn't do any of the things that people proclaim that they do, like hedging against inflation and all that other sort of nonsense. In short periods of time, there's market responses to those things, just like the dollar or euro or other forms of currency, no different than stocks or bonds react to different time periods. But if you're looking at it over a long period of time, which frankly, if you're investing money, your money needs to be invested for long periods of time. If you need the money in the next 3 or 4 years, it better be in cash anyway. Gold or silver or any of those other things aren't going to save you for the next couple of years of cash flow. So if you're investing long term and you look at what's happened over recorded history for those things, I don't understand how you get to a point where you go, this makes sense for long-term investing.
He addressed that talking about how 100% equity ride is the thing that got you there best, I guess. And best is not the word that I'm looking for here, But that's the most efficient ride, right? Over a long period of time. The problem is that you're most likely to upset your own apple cart, OG. So you basically have two choices, three choices. You could put some money in cash. Horrible idea. You put some money in bonds. He made a huge case for that. And we'll send people to the YouTube video of the entire discussion if they want to hear why he thinks that bonds are suboptimal. But over time, if you put just a little bit of precious metals, and I remember seeing this before, backtesting and looking at what gold's done lately, it is doing the same thing that we've seen over long periods of time. So I don't think it's any different now. Just a touch of gold in your portfolio, behaviorally, OG, could help you stay on track because of the fact that gold's correlation with the stock market, not that high, and outperforms bonds and cash.
Well, I don't know that it outperforms bonds, but maybe outperforms cash depending on the time frame. Again, I think that people have to recognize that from an investment standpoint, the reason that you behave poorly is because your expectations do not line up with what's really happening. If you have the expectation that your investment portfolio is always going to, you know, do this, you know, whatever this range of returns are, and then it violates that range, that's because you haven't done a good enough job of setting the rules of the game. And it kind of speaks to what you're talking about here, Joe, about like only people blow up their plans when things don't go their way, right? Like if it goes the way you expect, you go, that's what I expected. You know, the people who expected the market to go down, or not expected, but were okay with it going down last year, 18, 19, 20% went, ah, this happens. I'm going to be okay with it. The people who expected only a minus 10 are blowing up their plans. The same thing on the upside. When the market goes up 20% and you look and you go, why am I up 5? Why am I up 7? Why am I up 10? Everybody else is up 20. You're going to blow your plan up because it's not what you expected. So you have to have a better understanding and take some more time to set the rules up, which we would talk about the rules, which is, you know, an investment policy statement. If you take the time in advance to say, these are the rules of the game I want to play, then you're more likely to stick to those outcomes because it's going to be in the range of returns that you expect.
OG, you are talking about rules. Should I hear that word and think expectations? These are the expectations I have for my portfolio? Or is it something different when you say rules?
No, it's probably synonymous. I think rules and expectations can be kind of the same. I think rules are a little bit more of a guideline. You know, I would use that term to say, Doug, if you were creating a rule for your portfolio, you're the only one that's going to know if you broke your own rule, right? If you say, I'm going to invest $500 a month on the first of the month, regardless of what's happening in the market, that's the rule. And then you get to the first of the month and you go, yeah, but it's down today. I don't know. I don't think I want to invest today. You broke your own rule. You know, that's kind of how I'm thinking about that.
Okay.
We do have some people, OG, that are going to go into metals no matter how much you dislike them.
Well, I mean, math works. It's not my dislike of them. It's just my like of math is what it is. But yes, sure.
Sure.
People do silly things for silly reasons.
I asked him because there's so many uses for silver in production and in the industrial world, that silver has a lot of different things. When you look at gold, what do you actually do with gold? So I asked him that question. I said, you know, silver, you know, we've had silver experts on here before. And I love what one silver expert told us a couple of years ago, OG, that silver will do nothing longer than you can stay around.
Yeah.
Silver will drive you crazy. And then all of a sudden, the second you give up on it, it'll go through the roof for no reason. Right. So right. I asked him about that. And this is what he had to say when I asked him about the utility of gold versus silver.
Listen, I would take issue with your contention there. Gold has utility. There is no question it's demonstrated its utility over thousands of years. The most important source of gold demand is in jewelry. And you try telling ladies in India or the Middle East or all across Asia that that is not a utility. For them, it is indeed definitely a utility. The second way that gold has utility is in industrial applications. You know, there's an awful lot of it. It's only about 10% of total demand, but it's nevertheless important. And gold has utility for the central bankers who, for the last 12 years, on a net basis, have been adding gold to their reserves because they're not confident of the long-term future of the dollar, and they believe that they are dangerously overexposed to dollar assets in their reserves and underexposed to gold. That's been a trend for 12 years now. And finally, gold has utility for the investors. And this amounts to somewhere like 25 to 30% of each year's demand. So there's plenty of ways in which gold has utility, including as an investment. Silver, there's not a lot of investment in silver, and jewelry consumption of silver is very, very small. Yeah. Two-thirds or more of silver consumption is used in purely industrial processes. It does very useful things in, you know, electronics and in imaging and pollution control and water filtration. It does a lot of good things, but they are essentially all industrial applications, which means...
He talks about then, oh, gee, what he's getting into is the fact that while silver does have a lot of applications, it's all in one area. And when that goes up, all silver goes up. When it goes down, all silver goes down. With gold, it's much more of a diversified bunch of utility. I would love to have had you in on this conversation. Where were you when George Milling Stanley was here?
I wasn't invited.
We should.
He sounds so nice.
Yes, he is nice. He's been on a couple times. He is charming. And man, he took questions for about half an hour too. About gold. One of the best questions that we got from one of our stackers was how to buy gold. And he said, there truly is no wrong way, but having gold bars in your house might be an invitation for people to maybe show up unexpectedly.
Well, and I can give you a horror story on the other side of that. We had a client that reached out a couple of months ago whose father had purchased some gold kind of on one of these websites and, you know, got some mailer. Anyways, it was a big fraud. So
yeah,
all the money's gone.
Yeah. His recommendation was if you're going to go into metals or any investment, ETFs, exchange traded funds, a much better way to do that.
I would have, had I joined, I would have asked him who the world's largest user of silver is.
Is it you? Is that what the answer is?
No, it's Anne Margaret. Have you ever seen her Vegas show, Joe? That's a line from an old Wings episode. They're playing Trivial Pursuit, and Lowell thinks the answer to every question is Anne Margaret, because he knows he's played this game before, and the answer to one of these questions is Anne Margaret.
Science and nature. Who is the largest user of silver in the world?
Anne Margaret.
The Kodak Corporation.
Lowell, are you nuts? Anne Margaret, the largest user of silver in the world?
Have you seen her Vegas act, Roy? That gal's got some jewelry.
Now everybody's furiously asking, what is Wings? Like we've got...
Well, nice. You know what? If they got the OPP reference from 1991, then they know Wings.
Then they got it. Yes. Time for our TikTok Minute. This is the part of the show where we move away from precious metals and into some tomfoolery, as mom says, people are making on the TikToks. Doug, do you think this is eye roll?
Gold. It's gold.
This is gold.
It's gold. On today's show, I have to say gold.
I think we've all had parents visit us before, and parents may make the conversation a little more awkward than we want around finances. This is a gentleman who the only thing you need to know is that he's got like a flashlight on and he's hiding in his closet to make this video because he doesn't want his parents to hear. Let's listen.
I've now been here for 5 days. Today, my mom decided to tell me exactly how she wants her funeral. She's nowhere near dying. Just wants me to know. She wants to be taxidermed. I said, you seem to be mistaken. This is my home, not the Museum of Natural History. The conversation ended with, fine, just cremate me, but keep my titanium knees. I'm sure they're worth something. What do you think this house is, the Smithsonian? She then proceeded to tell me we could use her titanium knees as a Christmas tree topper. I'm sorry, Fran. Exactly how many laws would you like me to break once you go over the rainbow bridge? My dad chimes in and says, oh, you can just bury me in your backyard. My backyard? That's not suspicious or anything. I'm sure you make great Western hemlock fertilizer, but you're not going in my backyard. Send
thought prayers. I should have asked George Stanley Milling what titanium goes for. What maybe he could sell grandma's knees for. You've had days where you wanted to bury parents in the backyard, OG. We've had those discussions.
I don't, in their backyard. I'm with this person. I don't want to bury him in my backyard. That's maybe my brother's.
Let's not make
I'm kidding. I like my parents.
Oh,
golly, they're swell.
Yeah, OG cracked that joke with them earlier and they took it the wrong way.
What kind of fillings do they have?
Yeah, the old school, old people have silver ones.
And some gold.
And some gold, yeah.
My mom does. Okay. I mean,
not a lot, just a couple ounces, but hell, $1,800 an ounce.
Doug, you always out with your mom and you're like, hey, just dreaming about the estate, about getting at those chompers.
When she falls asleep, sometimes her mouth is open and I just go in there and just start counting up. Part of my retirement plan.
Thanks to our friend Courtney for sending us that one. That's pretty funny. And it goes a little longer. We'll link to that. And also to a big discussion about precious metals performance, about correlation, all those things. Kevin Bailey will dive into the details there of both of these. StackyBenjamins.com/201. This show is the 101. We go deeper on our newsletter every Tuesday and Thursday. Coming up next, Maya Lau was an investigative reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Her work has revealed names on a secret list of sheriff's deputies with histories of misconduct. Remember that investigation that made nationwide news, prompting the district attorney to review past criminal cases featuring some of those officers. She dove into cases like that as an investigative reporter. Now she's diving into your wallet. How do you spend money? How much money do you make? She's talking OPP, other people's pockets, on a brand new intriguing podcast that I've been listening to a lot lately. But Doug, before we get to Maya, you've got some trivia for us, don't you?
Hey there, Stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And since we're about to chat with Maya Lau about other people's pockets, let's go where you thought we were headed and talk about the original OPP. In 1991, OPP became the first rap song to become a pop hit, reaching number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100. So here's a question. What's the name of the band stacking all those Benjamins on their way to fame with this song? I'll be back right after I go ask the neighbor kids how big their allowance is. Maya Lau's got nothing on this investigative reporter.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Hey there, Stackers. I'm Big Spender and Mr. Low to No Budgeter, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. You know, I'm all about OPP. Other people's pen pal, other people's Powerball sharer. I'm down with OPP. But what hip-hop group released the first rap song to become a pop hit in 1991? It was the trio known as Naughty by Nature, talking about a whole different OPP than we are today. And now, here to give us a preview of how others are making and spending their money, let's say hello to Maya Lau.
And I'm super happy she's here in Mom's basement with us. The person with the real OPP, other people's pockets, Maya Lau, joins us. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Fantastic. Was that intentional? By the way, everybody in the Stacky Benjamins universe, including Mom, she might have asked you this upstairs, Maya, wants to know, was OPP intentional?
It was just, you know, something that came up. Somebody came up with the name Other People's Pockets and we're like, OPP, how do we feel about that? And we're like, let's lean into it. So we're going with that.
Well, we got it. We got it right away. So there it is. And we're not the smartest people. As you found out already, we are not the smartest people on earth. Why you, Maya? And why this project?
Well, I thought of it. I don't know.
Did you? Was it your idea? You pitched it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is all my fantasy. I started working on this in the sense of like thinking about it and wanting to do it maybe 3 years ago. I was a newspaper reporter. I was at the LA Times at the time. I had been a newspaper reporter several years, you know, journalist almost a decade. And increasingly, I just started to find my interest drifting more in the direction of like money and being frustrated with money, feeling like, you know, there's a real ceiling in terms of what newspaper reporters can earn, which of course I had always been fine with, especially in my 20s. But then as I got into my 30s, my mid-30s, I was like, you know, I think I want to make some more money in my life. And I started to ask people outside of work, either people who'd left journalism or other people I knew in my life, like, what is your career like and how much money do you make? It was always the most interesting part of my day after I'd had those conversations to talk to my husband at the end of the day and be like, guess who I talked to? And guess how much money they made? You know, like there's this financial voyeurism, this sense of like, oh, interesting. Like maybe it's a little more than you thought or a little less, or maybe they actually make most of their money from this other thing you didn't even know they did on the side or whatever. I just started to feel like it feels kind of basic, but I kind of want to do a podcast where I just ask people how much money they make, in part because I also just believe in salary transparency. And at the LA Times, I was underpaid. I know that because it came out as part of a lawsuit. There was a union push. There's a lot of talk about salary transparency and the need for it. And so this project kind of came about in a similar vein of, A, I'm curious and nosy, and I want to kind of figure out, like, I learn a lot from individual people's stories. Like, you know, if you could, like, pull your, like, your mom, pulling her aside and being like, okay, what's your story with money? You know, even if you've made mistakes, like, I just want to hear, how did that work for you? So yeah, it just came about because of that. And I pitched it and I got to work with this great podcast company, Little Everywhere, that I'm still working with. Eventually, we were able to get a distributor, Pushkin Industries. It's just kind of an exercise in sort of asking the money questions that you don't necessarily feel comfortable asking. Like, I felt like there was a lot of money podcasts that were talking about money, around money. When I whenever I would listen to them, I'd be like, how much money do you make? You know? And so I think it's also the investigative reporter in me that is like, let's just ask these questions that make people maybe feel a little uncomfortable. But I think that everyone secretly wants to hear these answers.
Can we go back to salary transparency for a second? Because if your podcast and listening to all of your episodes, it truly is about transparency. You're asking these people some questions. We'll play some clips here in a minute, Maya, for everybody so that they get a taste of just some of these questions that you're asking people. And I've been doing this a long time and I even went, wow, like she goes right there. I can understand why we might not talk about religion, why we might not talk about sex. Those may make things very awkward. I never got the money piece. Like I understand why employers don't want you to talk to somebody else at the Times or wherever about what your paycheck is. I don't want anybody to know that. I don't understand why workers don't share that with each other. Why do you think that is in the first place?
Well, I do think it's changing. Definitely younger people are more open about this and are like, yeah, you know, we're friends. Let's just talk about this. But I think that for a lot of people, there's this ingrained belief that it's rude to talk about money, that it will create further divides between people, that it's just not good to focus on it. It's not good to, like, would you just randomly get naked in front of your coworker? Like, it just feels like, no, we don't do that. But I do think that it's changing. And I think that people are starting to realize that knowledge is power and the secrecy really tends to just benefit the employer. I mean, that's why they want to keep it secret so that everyone doesn't start talking and start asking for more money and start going out for other jobs.
Yeah, because I can think of very few of those conversations that I've had, very open, honest conversations like your podcast about money, where I truly felt awkward around the person afterwards. I want to ask you about this, though. You talk about your background in journalism. You write on your LinkedIn profile this. I found this fascinating. I truly learned how to knock on doors and dig up documents by moving to Louisiana, and I stopped. And working in the small newsroom of the Shreveport Times. It was like, that's right down the road, Maya. You could come over. You could obviously hang out more often. Tell me, what did you learn in Shreveport that really helped your career?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, to preface this, like I was at the New York Times before that. That's where I started my career in journalism.
That
I was
is
in
a bold move. From the Times to Shreveport.
But I was a news assistant at the New York Times. So I was like bottom of the barrel. Like I wasn't a reporter. I wasn't an editor. But I was like, you know, doing a lot of administrative stuff and helping to run one of the blogs. And a lot of people would have stayed and did stay at the New York Times. Like kind of moving up slowly, kind of going the web editor route or whatever. And I just felt like, I don't know that I'm learning what I need to actually learn to be a reporter here. And I had some mentors who were like, yeah, you're not going to learn. I mean, you could, but it would take a longer time. Like, to learn to be a reporter, generally speaking, you need to go to a smaller market. You need to have more hands-on experience and be out in the field every day. And so that's where I really actually learned how to be a reporter. So I moved to Shreveport. I was a crime reporter. Every day you're out, you're knocking on doors, you're going to crime scenes, you're making sources. I had an editor there who had a very investigative bent. Like, just the questions she would ask me about a story were like, yeah, but how do they pay for that? And where did that money come from? And, you know, like all these kind of questions that were always going deeper. And I think it started to train my mind to think in that way. And it also, it worked with how I already thought, but that hadn't been sharpened enough. So, yeah, I think just having the experience of being, you know, you have more agency when you're the person who has to write this big story. Like, it's not you're helping on a story. It's your byline. You've got to turn it in. You've got to get all the quotes. You've got to make the sources. And it just teaches you to really dig and to how to, you know, both have like the people skills to get people to talk to you and to have the skills of like, I'm going to confront you, you know, like depending on who you're talking to. So
yeah, there's no backup. Nobody else is going to ask the tough question behind you.
Yeah. And we had just such a small staff too. So yeah.
Your episodes for Other People's Pockets are very much all over the place. And I want to talk about that where I just look at the first four episodes as we record this that you've done. And these people are so iconic and so different from each other. Let's start here on episode number two. You feature, well, this guy, this is somebody that I think our listeners, they might've heard this voice before. You ask him to identify himself and he says this.
Sure. I'm Adam Davidson. I was a business and economics journalist for a long time at Marketplace, the public radio show, then NPR, where I created Planet Money with a friend of mine. And then I went to the New York Times Magazine as economics writer, where I met you. And then I went to the New Yorker as economics writer. And I wrote a book called The Passion Economy. As I turned 50, I decided I don't want a job. I don't want a boss. So I just do a lot of different things now. TV stuff, not TV stuff.
He just does a bunch of different things now, Maya. He just, you know, casually does all these things. I think when Adam Davidson, who was on the show, by the way, talking about The Passion Economy, about that book, when he talks about his friend, I think that's Alec Bloomberg. He's talking about
Alex
from Gimlet.
Bloomberg, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Adam was an interesting guest because he really was pretty open about talking about his money. There's different kinds of guests. Like, there's some guests who they're okay sharing to a certain point, but money isn't really something they think about and talk about all the time. So the more you go, the more you might be like pushing them and making them feel uncomfortable. And then in the rest of the interview, they might be closed off. Whereas he, you know, he writes about the economy, you know, money is something he's thought about for years. I think he still maybe felt a little bit uncomfortable with the depth we went to, but like he can do it, you know, like he can handle it. And I think it's so interesting, like the idea of like, okay, so you're this really cerebral, high-minded thinker on money. What does your own bank account look like? You know, does it translate? Like, what does it translate to?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask about the prep for these shows. Like, they generally look to run around 40 minutes and you dive in and then I feel like it gets a little lighter and then you dive in again and then it gets lighter. Walk us behind the scenes. How do you design your episodes?
Well, we record usually for an hour and a half and then it gets cut down. And all the episodes are edited. So like something we may have talked about at the end could be put at the beginning or whatever. It's not necessarily exactly the order that you hear it in. And for that reason, we can't actually just put it all on YouTube with video because you can't edit. I don't know. Like, I don't know how you would edit. The video would look all like jumbled.
Lots of cutaways and B-rolls, Maya.
Yes.
Lots of cutaways. And that's what we do.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I usually try to structure it like I do any interview or conversation where it's a little bit of like, tell me about yourself. And people usually, A, the listener needs to hear some of that background, and people tend to like talking about themselves. So it kind of is like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe a little bit relaxing. And then sometimes we do this like cold shower thing in the beginning where it's like, okay, this is uncomfortable. Let's get over with the money, like the hard money questions. Like, how much money do you make? Like, we just start this like lightning round at the beginning versus doing a lightning round at the end. We don't always do that.
Can I go ahead and play one of those? Because we've got Adam Davidson on one end, who's been doing this forever. And episode four, actually episode one, two, and three, pretty iconic people. Episode four, you interview somebody, I think 99.99999% of us will not know. Her name is Carmen.
Because she's awesome.
She was a badass. Mm-hmm. She was incredible. And you open up the episode this way to your point. This is the beginning of episode four of Other People's Pockets.
Carmen, welcome to Other People's Pockets.
Hi, I'm super excited to be here and talk with you.
We're going to start with a cold shower. A lot of podcasts have a lightning round at the end, and we're going to do it in the beginning just to be different. Are you ready?
Cool. Yep.
Who are you?
I'm Carmen.
How much money do you make?
Currently $900 a month.
Have you ever talked publicly about your finances before?
Nope.
And how do you feel about talking about your finances and about financial transparency in general?
The word that comes to my mind is icky.
It sounded like that surprised you a little, which she said icky.
Yeah, a little bit, because she's also very open and funny and irreverent. So I was like, oh, but yeah, I mean, she has a different perspective where she really is all about like sharing and taking care of her community. And it's not about like I didn't want to do a show that's like, okay, these are all people that are like rich or like going to teach you how to be rich or whatever. Like maybe some of them are, but maybe that some of them aren't. And they don't really think about money that way. So I thought that she's just really fun to talk to, because I just think that hearing just normal people, yeah, I just don't think the point is to like only hear from like people who make six figures, you know. Hopefully we're going to have enough variety that it's not all that.
And I was thinking about constructing a show like yours. You, for a lot of these people, for all the reasons we've talked about previously, you'd have to warm people up. You'd have to get them comfortable saying the stuff out loud. You must have known something about Carmen ahead of time to just go right at her. Your second question, how much do you make? She makes less than $12,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. And lives with her parents. Yeah.
Yeah, and she said it right away. Like, is that just based on your guess? Do you know when ahead of time when you can go there, when you have to kind of roll into it slowly?
Yeah, I mean, we do screen people ahead of time and say, hey, we'd love to have you on our show. This is what our show is about. The heart of our show is asking people how much money they make. So how do you feel about that? If they're like, absolutely not, I wouldn't even share a range, I will not talk, then it's like, you're probably not the right fit for our show. But if they're like, yeah, that's cool, or like, I'm okay sharing a range, or I'm okay, you know, whatever, if they kind of get what the point is, then, you know, so there's that pre-screening that goes on. But I think that I'm just always trying to read where someone's at and like read their energy. And I do have a lot of questions, because that's like the fun part for me is like, oh my God, I can think of 1,000 questions I want to ask you. But during it, I'm also really just listening and just like, oh, well, here's another question. You know, I try not to make it like a questionnaire. So I think to your point of like, how do you kind of move with them to make them comfortable? It's the same that any person would do in a conversation. Like, oh, I feel like we could go here now. Or, oh, like, let's back off. We're getting too bogged down in the details and this isn't feeling energetic. So
it certainly is fun for the listener, because as I was going through the first episodes, like the fact that sometimes it's early, sometimes it's late, but we know the question's coming. And just as an example, you go there at the 20-minute mark with Adam. Let's listen to this one, because you just, all of a sudden, you just ask this.
How much would you say you'll probably take home this year?
Maybe like $340, something like that. I'm not sure.
What's the most money you've ever made in a year?
Seven something, I think. This is my worst year of take-home pay in many, many years. I mean, I've made over 500 almost every year since, I think, 2015.
And then he goes into the why, and we'll let people listen to the why. And it actually is very interesting to see what he's building and see what he's doing. But when he says this is his worst year, I don't think there's a lot of people, Maya, given our friend Adam, any empathy.
No, like feeling sad. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was like trying to elicit sympathy. I think he was just
not at all
trying to say this year I will bring home the least. But yeah, I mean, he and I are in the same profession, and I always internalize the message that like journalists don't make a lot of money by and large. Don't expect it. Do it for the social mission. And it's kind of eye opening to see like you could make good money if you want to. And part of that is being an entrepreneur, like not working at a set company, but having different things that you can do and be creative with your time. And so I think that part of it is kind of interesting and even inspiring to be like, huh, this thing that I thought about this profession, like I've talked to plenty of other journalists who listened to that episode and they're like, I never knew that I could make that much money or that somebody could, you know? And it's just sort of like, huh.
It is inspiring. I found myself inspired because, and you know what inspired me, Maya, is the fact that he's so damn casual about it. The fact that for him, it didn't feel like it was a status symbol or was a, hey, I'm holding this over your head or I can buy this many Maseratis or whatever it was. It was just a number. And the fact that he put it out there, I thought, wow, it just very casual. It was very cool.
Well, and then he admitted like he really hasn't saved as much as he should over the years. So you can earn a lot and then you can spend a lot. And, you know, he's not happy about his saving habits. So yeah, it's all very real.
We plan our Stacking Benjamins episode 5 weeks out. For a lot of podcasts like ours, that's a long time. But I think that you guys got to start planning way before that for your show, I would think.
Well, we've been working on it for a long time, and we've already recorded maybe 20 episodes because we were recording before we even had a partnership with Pushkin. And we were like started to make the show so that once we pitched it to a distributor, we were like, we have this show. It's not a concept. It's an actual show that's ready to air. So we actually do have a lot banked. Yeah, it's not a show where it's like, oh, we're just going to schedule someone and they're going to come on and we're going to, because yeah, we do sometimes interview people and it's just not good or they're not giving us anything. And it's like, we have to kill this episode. So yeah, I mean, planning is also good for one's peace of mind.
Right. Well, I think it also makes it so that the number of times you're actually on a mic talking to the wrong person is minimized.
Yeah.
Who wants to waste all that time? I mean, do it in the pre-prep. The cool thing about the show, I thought more than anything, and I'm going to play one more clip here for you, Maya, if you don't mind, which is going back to Carmen. This is not truly about money. It really is about dreams. And you ask Carmen a little bit about her dreams and where she's going, and she shares, and I want to play just a little clip from kind of what's on her mind.
She takes photos. She's a photographer. She's younger than me. So our dream has been to like create a magazine where I write and she like takes photos. So maybe that will be in the plans.
Yeah.
Like I'm very much like, I love creating things. So I see myself doing that. And I don't know. You don't really earn a lot of money. So I'm very like aware that I'm going into this with not earning a lot of money when you like create things and like try new things. So I'm very aware of the lifestyle I might have.
She's so realistic. I found myself pulling for her going, no, you can make a lot of money.
Yeah,
and do
me
this.
Too. Me too. I mean, I think that being creative and being resourceful are the skills that you need. Those are the skills that can lead to making more money if you want to. I don't believe in this idea of like, well, if you're a creative, like, you've signed up for, you know, you've taken a vow of poverty. Like there are entrepreneurs are creative, you know, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can use your creativity. I actually did tell her that and then it got cut, but don't sell yourself short. But I think she's also taking the bus versus like driving a car and she hasn't saved for a car. And she told her parents like, I'm okay, I'm thriving. Like she has like the things that matter to her. And I think that what was cool too is like we're getting all these people, but her in like this very specific period of time, like she's in her early 20s. You know, what does money look like at that point? Because I do think your priorities change over time. And it might be interesting to interview her again in 10 years and be like, so now how do you feel about money or whatever?
Almost like you said, you feel different now, right?
Oh, totally.
You're like, hey, well, that's what scares me about young people in the FIRE movement who say, I'd be okay living in a tent the rest of my life. I'm like, you are 24.
Yeah, you're 23. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, at 55, I'm way too bougie for that.
Oh my gosh. I served in the Peace Corps. I was 25 at the time. Totally fine with sleeping on random floors. Like, I could actually sleep, which is when you're older, you just can't sleep very well. And so I could sleep on a hammock. I was just totally all over the place. And I think so much of that FIRE stuff is like, I want to be like, but is this just your personality? Like, you just like, because some people just are just minimalist type people. And it's not like that they're more virtuous or anything. It's just like, that just works for you. But yeah, is it always going to work for you? Yeah. I don't know.
I just have one more question. I talked about some of the great stuff I got out of your show. What do you hope people get out of other people's pockets?
I really hope that what people get out of it is that they might feel inspired to ask people in their lives how much money they make in a spirit of curiosity and maybe to help them negotiate a raise for themselves. I hope to kind of normalize this conversation. And I also just really hope that finding out someone else's numbers can be just information, like just information that's interesting. I think that it's understandable that someone would hear, if you hear about somebody else making like millions of dollars a year, it just feels like, man, like I don't relate to that. I want to turn off this podcast and now I feel shit about myself. It's also just a data point. And like, and I'm not trying to take away like, you know, the very real forces that go into like why people get paid more or less. But this is like information, you know, similar to sex, how like used to be just like, you don't talk about it. You know what? We need to just kind of talk about it, get used to like these numbers being out there and yeah, get used to this being a conversation that we need to have. Cause the secrecy, I just don't think helps most people.
It's called Other People's Pockets. You can get it wherever you're listening to us now. Maya, thanks for hanging out with our stackers and giving us kind of a behind the scenes tour. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Aaron from Colorado Springs. And when I'm not teaching three boys how to patch hockey stick holes in drywall, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Big thanks to Maya Lau for hanging out. I also, OG, never understood the stigma around talking about money. Well, like why we, obviously you and I do a podcast on this. So
I never got it. Why doesn't everybody just start a show and talk about their own foibles?
As she said, you know, it takes the right person though to talk about it. Some people just go, yeah, I'm not gonna, it's very strong. This taboo nature of us talking about cash at all. But how about Shreveport? Huh? She was right down the road for a while from us.
Dang it. Could have hung out.
I know. Maya, next time you're back in Shreveport, we'll head down there and maybe do some gambling on a riverboat together. Oh,
maybe go to the Mud Puppies hockey game.
Mud Puppies?
But they're Mud something, right? The mud Don't bugs. They have a...
The Mud Bugs. Yeah, mud which bugs. which is the name for the crawfish.
Can't tell you how many times I've just been hanging out in Shreveport with nothing to do, and I wished I'd known about the Mud Bugs hockey. Because... It's what I think of when I'm in Shreveport. Ice, cold.
Maybe not. Maybe not the first thing. Hey, don't bust on the Mud Bugs. Junior hockey, alive and well in the South too, Doug. It's not just for the North anymore. I think it's better than Phoenix. You know, I never got the hockey in Phoenix. Yeah, let's go to the desert. 110 degrees.
Gets awfully cold there at night in the desert.
Have all the games at 1 a.m. Why don't we throw out the Haven Lifeline, dude? Let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first.
You know what? A really nice big screen TV with which to watch baseball in the spring.
How about like a mid-tier seat, maybe halfway up the lower deck with a hot dog to watch it?
Yeah, and pay like $11 for the hot dog. No, thank you. Pass.
And $80 for the ticket.
Yeah, I just want to sit.
And they lose by eight?
Yeah, no, I just want to sit in my house, be able to switch between all the games and just get the spirit of Americana and baseball, apple pie, and whatever else comes after that, Chevrolet.
And if Doug has it his way, he spliced mom's cable over to his house next door. So he's not paying for anything.
That happened years ago.
He's got that done. It's actually your loved ones and your time. But if your loved ones is the Detroit Tigers, like it should be, people, that's why they made buying quality term life insurance actually simple. You go to stackybenjamins.com/havenlife now for a free quote. Love what they're doing at Haven Life because they're committed. Where did OG go, by the way? Where that
he always he takes off all the time, but this time he did it at the worst time possible.
More committed than OG, apparently, who can't be bothered to get back in time for this segment. Jeez. They're committed to offering a modern way to buy life insurance. Their application's simple online. You get an instant coverage decision. Prices are affordable. And of course, their policies are issued by a company that's been around for quite a while, Mass Mutual, more than 160-year-old insurer. We have Steve, who's, by the way, in the guest bedroom editing this show right after we make it. Why doesn't he just come on down? But no, he sent in a question to the Haven Lifeline.
Hey, fellas, this is the amazing Steve.
No, be anonymous.
Hold on. You want me to be anonymous? Okay. Hi, this is John. It's too late. That won't work. It's Steve Stewart. I was wondering, a friend of mine was wondering when it's appropriate to take over someone's investment decisions. I'm not talking about...
Not you, the anonymous guy.
Oh, yeah, anonymous. This friend of mine, we'll just call him Johnny John Shorts.
What?
Johnny John Shorts isn't talking about power of attorney stuff. We're really just talking about retirement and pension stuff. Johnny's dad passed away a few years back and has been helping his mom understand what she has and how she can manage it. And for the past several years, she's been very comfortable with the decisions and has been loving what's going on. Then she had a meeting with a rep at Company X, we'll call it, and she agreed to put some money in a single payment deferred annuity, which Johnny had talked to her about, but she agreed and, you know, she's comfortable with the decision. So good, fine. But then she also allowed them to take the formerly easy to understand 5 mutual fund mix that she was comfortable with, and it was easy for her to rebalance, and she let them take it over. So now they're doing all the management of it, and there's all these trades and stuff like that. And now we don't know what, my friend and his mom doesn't know what's going on. Johnny doesn't see a time when his mom will ever be fully confident to do it all herself. And he really hates it when they go to meet with Company X and she turns to him and looks to him for the answers. So going back to my original question, when would it be appropriate, if ever, to take over someone's investment decisions? Not necessarily managing the portfolio, but at least saying, don't make any decisions without consulting Johnny John Shorts.
What?
Thanks for taking my friend's question. You can send his shirt to at.
What the hell? I mean, he didn't even do it like an accent to try to disguise his voice at all.
I think the questions are really good, but this segment's kind of going in the toilet lately. We seriously need you to send in your questions, people. We need you to send in your questions so I don't have to live through this anymore. Please, please help me. Help me help you. Help me.
I've got a lot of friends in different regions of the country who can call in.
No, please, no. Oh, yes, please, no. If you've got a question for the OG, we had a barrel full of them. And this time of year, every year, we hit the bottom of the barrel because we go crazy in January and February answering a lot of them. And then we get off on different things the rest of the year. So time to refill the barrel.
But I think you've got this one, Joe. I think you got this one.
I think I do.
I got thoughts. I got thoughts, but you go first.
Yeah, well, no, let's hear your thoughts first so I can tell you how wrong you are.
This will be fun for everyone. You know, I'm not thinking about it from a mathematical or financial planning aspect, but this to me sounds more like a relational question than it does a financial planning, you know, the mechanics of retirement planning. When's the right time to take over? It could be when that person 2 years into retirement, if they're not capable and they don't show a confidence or a comfort level with managing their own things and they're looking to somebody for help. Or it could be when they're 85 and the cognitive skills are not all there. But in either case, and I'm managing through one of those right now myself, I think in either case, short of a complete absence of cognitive skills and, you know, in a severe Alzheimer's or something like that, you have to make that person want your help. Let me rephrase that. I don't think there's any way you're going to say, Mom, I'm taking over. I just don't see that going well ever, because independence is important, very important to most senior folks. And so I think you have to have a discussion, a very tactful discussion, to make sure that person's comfortable, and then maybe just plant a seed and say, I'm willing to help. I love you. I want to make sure this goes well for everybody's benefit. When you're ready, or if you think you need some help, I'm here and I'm happy to get involved. And I think you just leave that there and you let that grow a little while. Maybe plant it a little earlier than you think, because it could take a couple of years for that person to be comfortable to come back and ask you for that help. But I think an approach where it's, Mom or Dad, you don't have the skills or the ability right now to manage your own, so I'm going to step in, that's going to end in a fireball, I think.
Yeah, I do too. My issue really is first, Doug, around the advisor that's handling it now, because the thought process here is that we need to replace the advisor. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know that the advisor is doing anything poorly except communicating poorly. And that gives me pause, because if Mom doesn't understand what's going on and son isn't involved in this decision to the point that advisor is, you know, you talk about selling, everybody's selling all the time, selling people on their own goals. So I'm going to use selling as a non-negative term, just selling Johnny gym shorts or whatever the heck the name is.
That's awkward.
If the advisor isn't communicating, let's put it that way. Maybe that's even a better word. Communicating to the son what's going on with Mom's permission so that they get it. I mean, the fact that they went to an asset allocation that has more funds, if Mom has a substantial amount of money, that might not be a bad move. But the fact that Mom doesn't know what the heck's going on and son doesn't know why, and it just seems more complicated and we can't articulate the reason, that's the reason to get rid of your advisor. If your advisor doesn't make you smarter, then certainly I think so. But, you know, with somebody who is, who's an older person, I don't get as afraid of especially a fixed annuity, because it's going to pay higher than a CD, but it still mellows out the volatility. It looks and smells like a CD because you're not annuitizing it. There truly aren't a lot of problems with that product like we see with a lot of annuities. So I don't know that I have a problem with that. I don't know that I have a problem with more funds, depending on the amount of money. More funds might be closer to what we call the efficient frontier. But the communication is a real problem, right? Yeah. That is a real problem. Son doesn't know what's going on. Mom doesn't know what's going on. So that's the issue.
It occurs to me that maybe Johnny/Steve was asking, are there telltale red flags when an advisor says go to an annuity, or an advisor does these three things, that's when you should step in, or at least advise your loved one, you might be taken to the cleaners right now. So,
Generally, an annuity is a red flag, right? Where I go, is this a commission? Am I, because annuities can be high commission products. So my radar goes off that you might be in for a ride with that. Also, going to a managed account, I don't know what the fee is that they're charging to manage it. I don't know what the asset allocation is is it better, or is it just different and more complex so that they get paid? So all the red flags, Doug, are there, but I don't know. I don't know, because I don't know how big the portfolio is. I don't know what they're chasing, but that doesn't bother me as much as the fact that Johnny doesn't know. Mm-hmm. Johnny/Steve. The fact that Johnny/Steve doesn't know is a reason to fire the advisor. That is a reason, because if Mom can't articulate it and he can't articulate it, and we got advisor off running around doing a bunch of stuff that we don't understand, why do we have that person?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, you don't have to know everything about every fund. Like, one of my favorite places to invest is emerging markets. And I look at some of these emerging market funds that I invest in. I don't know the intricacies of those markets, but I know that the people that are managing that fund do. And I know their track record. I know what they've done before. I also know that the indexes that I'm in other areas are reliable indexes with low fees, but I don't know every stock that's in the international index. I don't know exactly what it did the last five, like, I don't have to know everything, but I do have to have confidence that it's being managed well.
I think you nailed it. We don't need OG.
Yeah, what do we need that guy for? I can't believe he's not back yet. It's so weird. StackyBenjamins.com/voicemail is where you go to please end my misery and send me a question. Send OG a question. Send us a question so we don't get another one from Dorchester. Is that where that one was from?
Kana.
Or from Wisconsin.
Kana and Donna.
Or from Johnny Gym Shorts. No. Yeah. Great questions, by the way.
Don't forget about my friend in Australia.
That was amazing. Boy. They all had fantastic questions. StackyBenjamins.com/voicemail.
You know, there are like thousands of people. I'm not kidding. If you look at the stats, there are thousands of people listening to us in Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Mongolia. Why can't we get a call from there? Wouldn't that be awesome? Let's hear from our international friends. We got a lot of listeners all over the globe. Why can't we hear from them?
Come on. Doug issued you a challenge.
Yeah.
StackyBenjamins.com/voicemail. All right. We've got a bunch of stuff going on in the basement outside of the podcast. If you want to know all the different places where we can entertain you and talk more money geekery, head to StackyBenjamins.com/welcome. And that will give you our Instagram lives, our YouTube, like we talked to George Milling Stanley. We've talked recently about budgets. We've talked about tax software, last minute tax planning, so many topics, so little time. StackyBenjamins.com/welcome. But if you're not here for that, you're here because of the fact that you're worried, as our piece today talked about, with gold prices kind of being all over the place because people don't know what the Fed's going to do. They're worried about the economy. OG and his team have put together a free guide that shares 8 moves to make in a down market. This guide will help you plan more and panic less, no matter what the market does and what you see on the news. Head over to StackyBenjamins.com/guide and get this helpful free guide from OG and his team. That's StackyBenjamins.com/guide. All right, that's it for today. Coming up on Wednesday, man, do we have a fun show for you. Dr. Henry Cloud will be here talking about trust. We've all had times when we've placed trust in the wrong people, and this is how to decide who to trust, when to trust them. I think this has a ton to do with not just money and maybe your advisors, but also has a lot to do with the world of work, about your family life. Dr. Henry Cloud with us. All right, Doug, you got it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, I'll tell everybody what they should have learned today. First, take some advice from Maya Lau and what's going on in other people's pockets to put your earning and spending in perspective. Second, have discussions now with your loved ones to make sure you know their wishes after death and to let them know you're not willing to go to jail to make them happen. But the big lesson? Turns out some of these neighbor kids make more from their allowance than I get paid for being on this show. Time for this guy to get adopted. Thanks to Maya Lau for joining us today. Check out her podcast, Other People's Pockets, wherever you're listening to my adenoidal voice right now. We'll also include links in our show notes at StackingBenjamins.com. Wait, adenoidal's not a good thing? This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2023, and is created by Joe Salcihi. Our producer is Karen Repine. This show was written by Lacey Langford, who's also the host of the Military Money Show, with help from me, Joe, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. Kevin Bailey helps us take a deeper dive into all the topics covered on each episode in our newsletter called The 201. You'll find The 411 on all things money at The 201. Just visit StackingBenjamins.com/201. Tina Eichenberg makes the video version of this show. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude and Kate Youngkin are our social media coordinators, and Gertrude is the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So say hello when you see us posting online. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type StackingBenjamins.com/basement. Not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show.
Got a quick addendum, a postscript, as it were, to all of the Girl Scout things. Thank you for the people that had sent out some emails. Happy to support some stackers and their kids. The thing that I was bummed about was that they didn't have any of the new flavors. Like by the time I got to it, like the new one, the raspberry one, is all the cat's meow.
Is that the one they're selling like on eBay for a bajillion dollars now?
For $100 a box?
Yeah. So I want to a little shout out to Julie and her daughter, Lena, who sent a card. Says, thank you.
Oh, look at that.
And get this, $200 inside of the box. Well, two boxes of raspberry cookies, but basically $200, like you guys said. So
they're going to see those on eBay soon?
Yeah.
you're reselling them on eBay since they got you the golden ticket?
Should I not?
Oh, I've got a golden ticket.
No, I think, I don't know.
I'm just kidding. We had them. My kids don't like chocolate and fruit, but I thought they're pretty good.
Are they, so describe them to me. Is there like a fruit filling or is it just the cookie? It's kind of got a raspberry flavoring.
Wait a minute, OG. Describe them and talk really slowly.
So when I bite into the chocolatey goodness.
There you go.
Huh? Yeah.
They're thin mints, but instead of the mint flavor, it's raspberry flavor.
Okay.
So
I cannot see paying $100 for that,
but somebody does. And I'm going to feed the addiction for 2024 by parlaying the two raspberry boxes into the 2024 Girl Scout budget.
Yeah, but I love that handwritten thank you note. Yes. That's amazing. It's
very cool. From Troop 979, Lena, you're welcome. And hit me up anytime you need more cookies sold because I'm good for it.
Who did? So I've already crushed a couple of boxes of the trefoils that you've sent my way. Who am I eating on behalf of? Like what small child am I helping out? Just pushing whole sleeves of cookies
or
straight into my face. It's like the
Simpsons thing. Have you seen that Simpsons part where Homer goes to hell? We talked about this before. And
oh, yeah. And he just keeps eating donuts.
Devil keeps on trying to feed him donuts. Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head without looking.
Because I'm all about charity and helping out the youth.
I'd have to look. Anyway, so that was cool. But I also know that there's more like Girl Scout times throughout the year. Like it cycles throughout the, it's not everybody in the universe isn't doing Girl Scout cookies right now.
Oh, wow. I thought so. Because I've been seeing it all a lot of places.
Oh, okay. I understood it.
No, like online.
I have learned more from our Facebook group, The Basement, about Girl Scout cookies in the last 2 weeks since we started talking about this on the show than I ever knew. God. And it does cycle. It does.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
Yeah, different groups. And there apparently are two different bakeries. I know more about this.
Holy cow.
Than I really want to know.
That was a fiery thread about the bakeries?
Yes.
Holy cow.
I got to check the serial numbers on my cookies now to make sure I'm getting the right bakery?
Yes.
It's like, where was that coin minted? Settle down, people.
Yeah. We get angry about some stuff.
Well, it was nice for Lena to send a card. I appreciate that. That's fun. And your cookie's already gone, so.
It went to a good home, Lena.
Went to a good, cause.
Good home. Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? And you could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.